Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
Everything's true. God's an astronaut. Oz is over the rainbow. Midian's where the monsters live.
This is Brother Jake.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is true.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen! And not a one of you is prepared for it!
And they are sometimes joined by guests like...
This is Travis.
I had to stop her from screaming.
And Diane.
If you men only knew.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1973 movie Quadrophenia, directed and the screenplay written by Frank Rodham, who, by the way, I know nothing about.
Yes, I was -3 when this movie came out.
Yeah. Well, I love the idea of a concept album or a rock opera more than the actual ones I've heard. Like, I think Tommy has some great songs, but I don't really like the whole story. It just never really appealed to me. But something about Quadrophenia, maybe it's because the time I heard it in my life, or the fact that it allowed me to be nostalgic for something that I never knew. There's probably a better word than nostalgia, but like everything about this album, and then when you look at the movie, even though it's not as great a movie as it is an album, at least in my opinion, all of the characters in the movie look like you think they should look, I think. And I don't know whether that's a good example of what the Brighton Beach riots were in the 60s between the early 70s, between the mods and the rockers. And I don't have any, you know, I heard tales of Woodstock and hippies and things living in America, but we didn't know what mods were, you know, and rockers were, I guess, Elvis fans with motorcycles, but it was never like a musical genre that I could think of.
Yeah, that was, so I guess we didn't really talk about what our relationship was to this movie, but I watched this movie with you on video in our downstairs when I was pretty young, and I can't imagine I understood more than every fourth word in the movie at the time, but I do. There are some things in this movie that I really remembered from watching it that first time when I was a little kid. One was a really young sting. One was you trying to explain to me why the rockers were the other group who didn't listen to the music that I considered rock and roll. That I remember that was a really hard one for me to wrap my head around.
Oh, yeah. Well,
yeah, go ahead.
I have one memory, and it's a memory of, I think at some point, either you were confused about who somebody was, but I called the lead girl. I said, "No, that's Steph," and you had thought that she was perhaps hearing impaired.
Yeah, I was halfway through the movie, so I think I said something like, "She doesn't act deaf." And you would not stop laughing at me.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry. Now I would hold it in check a little better, I think. But you know what? I love the accents in this movie, too. I'm sure we'll get into it a little bit, except that when I was doing notes for this movie, as I encountered the actors' names, I wanted to see what other things they'd been in, because they look sort of familiar, but, you know, who knows? And it turns out I can sum up everybody's IMDb credits by saying that everyone in this movie has been in a ton of BBC or otherwise British television.
I was actually really surprised to see Ray Winstone in it.
Oh yeah, Ray Winstone was the standout from this movie.
Little Ray.
God, yes. Yeah, that's, we're going to get to that. That was a fun and weird scene.
This whole movie was weird.
Oh, but it was, again, to me, it was so great because it's an idealized version of something that I hadn't ever experienced. So to me, it's a pure thing. there's nothing that I have in my frame of reference that makes any of this movie ring untrue. It all seems like a completely true tale. Like the songs and the environment and the characters and the clothing and everything. It's perfect because, like I said, there's nothing I have in my history to contradicts it.
Yeah, it was a bizarre experience just watching it, especially as an older gentleman now, watching it through probably more of the lens of being a parent than being a disaffected youth.
Oh yeah, no, it's a horrifying tale for parents. This is definitely, you know, you realize that. Again, I think we brought up Jim Morrison at a certain point, although not during The Lost Boys in this context, except that we mentioned that he never got old. But this is, of course, a movie, written, the music was written by a band who is most famous for having the line, "I hope I die before I get old." And of course, now all of them got old, and some of them are still very old. And yet, all their music, through most of their music, was written from the point of view of a teenager. You know, a disaffected youth, which, I don't know, arguably a lot of rock is all about, you know, teenagers.
Well, makes sense.
I mean, I know I listened to Never Not Funny, the Jimmy Pardo podcast, and he was talking about, because he's a big Kiss fan, and he was talking about Christine 16 and how that was a wildly inappropriate song.
Yeah, you could pick out a whole handful of inappropriate songs.
Yeah, yeah. The Who
seemed to specialize in them.
Oh yeah,
they were generally pretty clever about it though.
Yeah, they were very clever, but yeah, they always had like risque topics.
Yeah, I remember being too little when you were explaining to me about Squeezebox and Pictures of Lily.
Yeah, well, yeah. Well, we're going to get to some lyrics at the end of this movie, because they play at the end that it's horrible. And yet, like I said, I love this album. I love every part of this. I love the fact that it is written as an opera. There are four different characters with four different themes. And I mean, they're all part of the whole idea is Jimmy, the main character. He's not just schizophrenic, he's quadriphrenic.
It's brilliant.
Yeah. I don't know if you're landing a plane, but that's what it sounds like. Yeah, so, and
I'm really impressed you can hear that. No, that was an actual plane flying over my house.
Oh, well, that's nice. So, anyway. Okay, well, first, I guess I should ask one question first. Did you enjoy watching this movie? Did you like it?
No.
Oh, awesome, because I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. So I'm eager to hear the points where we disagree.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have the Eric Take Shelter experience.
Oh, really? Okay.
I think it's a good movie, but I did not enjoy experiencing it.
Ah, okay. Well, yeah, let's get into it. The film is set in 1964, and it follows the story of a guy named Jimmy, who's played by Phil Daniels, most notably is appearing on EastEnders, but who is also voices in both Chicken Run and Free Bird, the animated movies. And this is a lovely movie because the beginning of the movie is the end of the movie. We don't know it yet, but Jimmy walking back from the cliff in the very beginning of this movie is actually what happens after the end of this movie. So it's got a happy ending. And in fact, I have a question for you at the end of the movie about what you think happened to Jimmy after this movie was over. But it starts with Jimmy walking back from the cliff, and it starts with the opening song from the album, I Am the Sea, which has all four themes in it. And then as the opening credits roll, you get the song The Real Me, which is pretty great.
Can you see the real?
And we see Jimmy riding his Lambretta scooter to this club. And on the way, he's momentarily harassed by some motorcycle riding rockers. And he basically tells them to fuck off. And they kind of, there's some verbal sparring as they're on the streets, but they pretty much leave him alone. And he arrives at this club where he ends up buying blues. Blues are pills. And as best as I can determine, they are Dexamil, which were, I guess in the UK, they were called Drinamil. But they were a combination of an amphetamine and a barbiturate at the same time. But that seemed to be the drug of choice for the mods.
Why would you have such a concoction?
Well, you know, you wouldn't want to be too speedy, but you wouldn't want to be, you know, too downery. They were all under both the blues, and I think they mentioned reds at some point, at least during the album. And they were both what would be considered either dolls, like from the Valley of the Dolls, or Mother's Little Helper from the Stone song Mother's Little Helper. Because they were prescribed, the amphetamines were prescribed for weight loss, and the barbiturates were prescribed for depression. And in the 80s, they moved away from that in favor of prescribing benzodiazepines like Xanax and Valium.
Yeah. Have you seen The Wolf of Wall Street?
I have not. There's a Quaalude scene, right?
There's tons of drug use scenes in it.
Oh, okay.
But they talk very lovingly about the use of drugs, specifically Quaaludes.
Yeah, well, Secanol was like the reds and or the dolls, secobarbital, and that would be a similar drug. And it was also both Judy Garland and Jimi Hendrix pretty much died from Secanol abuse. Jimi Hendrix was too, he was too depressed chemically to avoid not choking on his vomit and dying. And Judy Garland just flat out overdosed. So this has a romantic history too.
Well, this movie is a romance.
Oh, it is. It is. It's a romance unfulfilled. Actually, it's a story about a guy trying to find an identity, and it doesn't work out so well. This is another movie where Kev is an amazingly good guy, although in this movie, Kev kind of has bad things happen to him. So
I think he has a very clear identity. He's just chosen one that is sort of an empty life.
Oh, except he's reaching. Anyway, we'll get there. So Jimmy's got to the club where you meet his friends. And after he buys some pills, he meets his friends. And it's sort of a rock music club where they're playing High Heeled Sneakers by Cross Section. I think it's a cover of some other artist, but it's a kind of a great little song from the day. And we meet his friends, who are Dave, who is Mark Wingett, Chalky, Philip Davis, and Spider, Gary Shale. By the way, Gary Shale, British TV, but also the movie Shock Treatment, which was the sequel to Rocky Horror Picture Show. And
I actually watched with Jason.
Was it as bad as he remembers?
I remember nothing about it, so.
Huh.
I just remember, I think I watched Rocky Horror Picture Show and Shock Treatment back to back with him.
Oh,
maybe him and Paula.
Oh, could be. Well, when I found the clip of that had Little Black Dress in it, the song was catchy, but it was a little appalling. So I could see where a whole movie of that would grow old. Although I really enjoyed watching Rocky Horror again. So I don't know how. Oh, by the way, Chalky also is in Alien 3.
So, yeah, I had a question about Chalky for you.
Yes.
Did he look to you like maybe the older brother of the crazy Whitney Houston stalker dude in The Bodyguard?
Oh, I don't know. I can't picture that guy.
All right.
I'll have to look it up.
Picture Chalky, but maybe more mentally ill.
Well, okay, these guys, it's funny, I actually wrote in my notes, is this swingers? Is that the relationship between these guys? Although it doesn't have any other plot element of swingers. It just, for some reason, I thought, oh, this is, you know, this is a movie about a bunch of guys. But less that, really, than Jimmy's journey. But we also, at the club, we had the first glimpse of Steph, who is actually not hearing impaired, and she's the lovely Leslie Ash.
No, you said very clearly she's deaf.
Of course I did. Yeah, turns out she may be pretty and all, but she's a horrible person.
She's terrible.
Yeah. Now, granted, the rest of the guys have some issues. The nicest person, the most human character in this whole little drama is Kevin. But we'll get to him in a second. So.
Yeah, I would have much rather watched a movie about Kevin.
Yeah, well, anyway. So after the party, Jimmy comes home and we get a nice shot of Jimmy kind of wandering through his own house because he lives with mom and dad and his sister. And then we also get a nice shot of Jimmy's bedroom that has his pictures of, I guess, page three girls or and then news clippings about the riots between the mods and the rockers. And also it's wonderfully framed shot where he's sitting on his bed and right behind him is a picture of Pete Townsend.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was pretty great.
It was. Yeah. His little nudie photos made me really sad for people before the internet.
Oh yeah. Well, it gets sadder a little bit later. But yeah, I agree. So then we are introduced to another thing I've never experienced. It's going to, I guess, a bathhouse.
Yes, that was like truly a bathhouse where you go take a bath in a bathtub, not like a Japanese or even like a Roman bathhouse where it's more of like a communal experience.
Yeah, exactly. I don't even know if there is a word for it. I don't know what it is. But yeah, you go into a little tiny cubicle that has a tub. That's it. And that's where you hear in the next stall over is this guy singing, Bebopalula, She's My Baby.
Yeah.
And Jimmy, who is a mod and does not put up with crap like that rock and roll music.
Oi, will you leave that out, please?
Do what?
Don't sing all that old rubbish, eh?
That ain't rubbish, pal. That's Gene Vincent, all right?
Yeah, that's what I said, old rubbish. Well, why don't you just turn over and do a few underwater farts, eh?
Why don't you just fuck off?
Yeah, fuck off.
Well, Bebopalula, she's my baby.
Da 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 do, da 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 do.
Me, yeah, baby.
You really got me now. Bebopalula, you got me so I don't know what I'm doing. Baby. Really got me. Yeah. Bebopalula, you really got me now. You got me baby. So I can't sleep at night. Bebopalula, you really got me.
Yeah. Well, you got me now.
You really got me now. You got me so I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What do you think this is? The bloody Eurovision Song Contest?
Ah! Right, don't shoot you out. Look, if you want to start, Shank, I'll see you outside.
Fuck me.
Kevin Elliott?
Jimmy?
Yeah. I thought you was in the army.
Nah, I got out, didn't I? How you going?
I'm all right, yeah. Yeah, the army didn't teach you to sing, did it, eh?
Nah.
Yeah.
Can you give me my brush back or what?
Yeah, all right.
It's funny, rock and roll.
How would you describe a mod?
Well, a mod would be like British Invasion, like what we consider British Invasion, because, of course, he counters with a Kink song. So it's, I mean, if you were to describe a mod, I guess, in dress, they wear really snappy, like, suits and stuff with little skinny ties. But over the suits, they will wear, like, a old army jacket, like an olive drab, long green army coat. And then they would ride scooters. And their scooters were, I guess they were adorned with extra side mirrors and lights on the front.
Yeah, the cooler your scooter was, the more mirrors it had and the more headlights it had.
Exactly. And then there were the rockers who wore leather and, you know, motorcycle, the whole motorcycle attire, and then rode motorcycles and had like pompadour hair and listened to things like Elvis and the Big Bopper and whatnot.
Yeah, it was really kind of throwing me for a loop that, like, in particular, Jimmy's father was complaining about the crazy way he dressed, when most of the time he was actually in a pretty good-looking suit.
Oh, yeah, he was very sharply dressed, really.
I mean, they were fairly clean-cut, so I didn't quite get all the animosity from the older generation.
Well, the fact that they were druggies and listened to music that was objectionable, I kind of get that part of it. But, you know, in the whole album, you know, you have the old people are drunks and then the young people are, you know, popping pills. But yeah, there's a whole song about zoot suits and stuff. So
yeah, there's an appearance by a beer that is probably my favorite moment in the entire movie.
Okay, when we get to it, you'll point it out, or you'll point it out now?
When we get to it.
Okay. So.
It is amazing.
Okay. Well, I can't wait. So you have this hilarious bathhouse scene where, yeah, there's entirely too much nudity of very pasty guys. I mean, I guess it doesn't, you know, I really want to see that anyway. But, and the fact that Jimmy... The guy who plays Jimmy is just so, I mean, he's like your typical Pete Townsend kind of looking guy, which is not super attractive. You know, he looks, especially when he's in the bathhouse scene, he looks a little monkey like.
Yeah, he is underweight for sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And then what is it? Chalky that has the five head.
Yeah.
If you look though, he's basically Roger Daltrey, looks just like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So it's, so, you know, it's all...
I get that, exactly. Jimmy looked like Pete Townsend, and Chalky looked like Roger Daltrey.
And
I'm sure a couple other guys were supposed to look like the other two members of The Who.
Did I tell you about watching Quadrophenia live? Well, I mean, it was obviously on tape, but on Access Television?
No.
Yeah, recently I saw it, and it was... I mean, obviously, it was, there was commercials in it, and I think they broke it up a little bit. Like, between songs, they just edited that out, and then they put the titles of the songs up as they came. But it was Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey, of course, the two surviving members. And I think Stuart Townsend is Pete Townsend's son, who was also playing guitar. And when they came to the Keith Moon parts, like in Bellboy, they actually had Keith Moon... Like, they had it on the video screen behind them. They had Keith Moon, who did his own lyrics from Beyond the Grave.
And did it sound good all put together like that?
Yeah, because, you know, as I have heard tale, and I don't know if The Who is part of this group of people. I think the Stones are, where when you're paying like $500 or more for a single ticket to go see them, they're maybe not even playing live. There may be a lot of people playing with their guitar turned all the way down.
Awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't know. So I'm going to give them all the benefit of the doubt. And just like, I think, yeah, I mean, you must've been with me when we saw Ozzy Osbourne and he was basically doing jumping jacks on stage.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, seeing Roger Daltrey do that trick where you swing the microphone around the cord a whole bunch of times and throw it way up in the air and then bring it back down. You know, the first time you see that, that's kind of cool. The 100th time you see that, you're like, stop that. That's almost like some sort of OCD thing you're doing, dude. Yeah. It would be like if Gene Simmons, like, did the fire trick on every song. Of course, which...
He probably does.
I was going to say, he might, actually, as it turns out. Who knows? Anyway, so at the House of Baths or whatever it is, we find out that during an argument that they're going to have, where they're actually jumping over the stall to confront one another, turns out While they're naked. Oh, yeah, yeah. It turns out it's Jimmy's childhood friend, Kevin, who is singing Bebopalula, She's My Baby. And that's played by Ray Winstone, who is in Beowulf and lots of British TV. Also, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, Snow White and the Huntsman, Hugo, Sexy Beast. Yeah. Ripley's Game. Yeah, so he's the name brand actor in this whole thing.
Yeah, he looks so young.
Yeah, well, and it's possible that all these people are name brand actors in England, though, because, like I said, they all have a lot of British TV credits. And the way British TV works, especially, you know, where they have a lot of series that are simply, like, six and out. So then we have the first uncomfortable, you know, because that was just kind of a funny thing. Once you got past the nudity, that was creepy. You know, later at breakfast, this diner thing next to them, Kevin sits down next to Jimmy, and Kev and Jim have a conversation, and Jimmy's a little freaked out because Kevin's a rocker.
He's initially freaked out, but, you know, once they start talking, it is the most human that Jimmy is for the entire movie until his buddies show up and he turns into a complete cock.
Exactly. And that's why this, I think, was really effective, is that, you know, Jimmy really has to have this identity of being a mod, and being seen with a rocker is not cool. So even though he and Kevin are clearly friends, and they're just, you know, Kevin's actually after school or whatever, Kevin went to join the army, but that didn't really work out very well. So he comes back and, you know, ends up getting a motorcycle, and it's not really clear really what Kevin does during his normal, like, we don't know what he does for a living, but he still lives around Jimmy. He calls Jimmy Jim, and that's the only time I think you hear Jim from anybody. Well, maybe his parents. But, yeah, so Jimmy really needs to be different. Of course, this means, you know, like all teenagers, different means different like all of your friends.
Exactly.
Yeah, so he totally ditches Kevin in a really sad, cold bit of business. Next, we go to a house party that they crash. The mods. And we meet another unfortunate character, Monkey, who's played by Toya Wilcox, she has something of a long, long career. She still has, I mean, she's a musician or a singer or something.
Was Monkey the girl that actually liked Jimmy?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
She had unfortunate hair also.
Yes, she did.
Yeah, and yeah, see, her character is very sad because, you know, there's only a couple of girls in this whole group that you hear from, and you got Steph, who is cute, but turns out a horrible person, and you have Monkey, who's not nearly as cute, and just sort of sad because she really fancies Jimmy, and Jimmy reluctantly agrees to make out with her once she gives him drugs. She and Steph both work at a chemist. But as soon as Jimmy notices that Steph is there dancing with Paul, he gets upset. And the Be My Baby song, I think there's a song after that, but he ends up putting on My Generation instead. And I love this My Generation because all the guys are into it. And when you get to the part where it's the stuttering where he goes, you know, why don't you all fade away? They really, you know, scream out the F word, and it's I'm sure what was really done at the time, at least in my head it was.
Yeah, it was a good scene to show sort of their group identity for the first time as mods, because as soon as that song came on, all of them pretty much stopped what they were doing and got up and did their little chicken neck dance that they do.
Which is fantastic. The dancing in this movie is awesome.
They are 100% into it. They are not self-conscious at all about it.
Oh, no. No, no. They are the coolest guys in the room. In fact, Paul, who's Stephanie's sort of boyfriend, I didn't even realize he was a mod until when he leaves with Stephanie, he gets on his own scooter.
Yeah, he's like a preppy mod. He's a mod who actually has a career.
Exactly. And, you know, you realize that, again, this is supposed to be 1964, but, you know, they're buying a whole bunch of these pills, and they're spending like £3, or like at the very end, he buys a whole ton of pills for £5. So these are poor people. I mean, they're working class. Well, sorry, they're working class. They're not like poor, but yeah, they don't have a lot of money to throw around. Although they spend a lot of money on their clothing.
Pretty much all of their money. I think they all live with their parents, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Except for maybe Paul.
Yeah, no, well, but maybe Paul does too. Again, that's maybe a different social environment over there too. You know, it's not like you go out and buy a little house. Things are expensive. But anyway, so at this house party, after Jimmy puts on My Generation and kind of turns out the lights and walks around because, you know, and Steph and Paul leave, we then see Jimmy going upstairs, probably to find Dave, I think. He's looking for Dave. And he just keeps going into rooms where people are having sex. Because everybody's having sex at this party but Jimmy. And then presumably Monkey too, because I don't think she ends up hooking up that you see. But so what does Jimmy do when everybody else is hooking up? He gives them the great line, which I think is like,
Dave, leave it out, Jim, will you? Give us a break.
Sorry, John, eh? Get in there.
Dave!
What?
What are you doing?
What do you think I'm doing?
Oh, yeah, where have I seen that face before?
Are you all right?
Yeah, get in there, my son.
Oh, piss off, will you? I'm sorry.
That door!
But he goes out and takes a scooter and, like, does donuts in the people's garden. So, mindless vandalism of other people's house. Not very cool.
Yeah, this is your first indication that Jimmy's not just kind of a loser. He is a psycho.
He is totally a psycho. Well, he's not, as we find out later, he's not just schizophrenic, he's quadriphrenic. Because he then, after he does donuts and I believe we call that malicious destruction of property, he then drives down and he's like by the river, and he ends up seeing a couple that like having, actually an old couple, making out under a bridge.
Even old people are getting it on, and Jimmy has nobody.
Yeah. So what does Jimmy do? In the first of a couple instances, he just looks at them and like goes, rah, and guns his scooter and nearly runs them over. So
his intimidating little Vespa with the 12 mirrors.
Well, and again, this underlines that Jimmy really, really wants to be cool, and he tries to be cool. And he has some of the patter down, but he's not cool at all, and he knows it. But he is well-dressed, and we've noticed that when he goes to his job the next day, where he works in the mailroom at an advertising firm, specifically a firm that seems to have it does advertising for a tobacco company. And there's a fun little bit of business in the bathroom where he's throwing up because he's, you know, all partied out from the night before, as the two executives are talking about how it's just fine to advertise cigarettes to people because the kids don't care. They're fine. They don't care about the risks. And, oh, they're both glad they gave it up long ago.
Yes, because all old people in this movie are hypocrites.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Turns out everybody's a hypocrite in this movie. Which doesn't, anyway, that's part of Jimmy's disillusionment. But then we get another nice scene with Kevin and Jimmy, because Jimmy's trying to fix his scooter in his little shed out of the side of his house. When
was this before or after Jimmy came home and his dad had been waiting up for him?
Oh, this is before.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty sure. Yeah. So, this is well before, I believe. And actually, this is again, and this is a beautiful piece of cinematography, because you have Jimmy trying to fix his scooter, and you see his face reflected in the four mirrors of the scooter as he's doing it, which is reminiscent of the cover of the Quadrophenia album. Because the cover of the album, if I remember right, is you see the Jimmy on his scooter with the big coat on, and in the four mirrors you see the four members of the Who.
Very clever.
Yeah.
You mentioned cinematography. That is one thing I really did appreciate about this movie, is it looked great. You know, it's gotten the Criterion treatment on DVD, and that's the version I watched, and it was so crisp and clear.
Beautiful movie. Yeah, you win then, because I saw the whatever crappy ass DVD original copy that came out.
No, the version I saw looked fantastic.
Yeah, well, they did a lot of, they really did. It really was shot very well. Yeah, so we have this heartfelt conversation between Kevin and Jimmy about how Kevin, like, says, look, you know, I joined the army because I wanted to be different too, but it turns out that was not what I wanted either. So, you know, maybe don't try so hard to be different. And Jimmy's like, no, you got to be different, you know. So they weren't subtle. They're hammering this point home.
Yeah, but Kevin's he's just a nice guy. I mean, he's helping him fix his scooter. And
oh, yeah. Kevin has no animosity.
About the Rocker Moss thing.
No, you totally get the sense that Kevin may have, you know, he may wear the rocker drag and ride a motorcycle, but he's not really his whole self-worth is not tied up in this image. So
yeah, I wanted to start following Kevin around.
But turns out unfortunate things happen to Kevin. But turns out unfortunate things happen to all sorts of people in this movie, except Steph. Anyway, we'll get to there. So Jimmy ends up going to give Steph a ride home from her chemist job. And that's where we first have an inkling that Steph is kind of interested in Jimmy too. And she's just going out with Paul because, you know, he's kind of flash and he's a lof.
He can pay for things.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, he can show her a good time, you know. And she's willing to do that. But she kind of likes Jimmy too, so she's happy to do that too. And then we have a nice pinball scene where the guys are playing, or Jimmy's playing pinball. And he and Dave end up having, I guess Dave teases him about Steph, and then there was a fun little play fight, but then they got kicked out of Alfredo's coffee bar. And as they're headed out, that's when Spider's scooter breaks down. And as the gang, the mods all drive off without Spider and the girlfriend, these group of rockers happen upon Spider, and that ends up with Spider getting beat up a little bit. Surprisingly little, I thought, compared to what they ended up doing, because when they find out that Spider's been attacked, the mods kick into action, Jimmy at the helm, and they're going to go and kick some rocker ass. So they go out and find these two hapless rockers who are like getting like at a chip shop or something, and start beating the crap out of one of them, who turns out to be Kevin. So when Jimmy finds out that they're beating up Kevin, he's like, no, stop it, and he drives away.
Yeah, he doesn't really try and stop it. He just screams no and then hightails it out of there while they're still kicking the crap out of Kevin.
You know, you're absolutely right. He didn't try to stop it. He yelled stop it, but then he just drove off. He didn't try to do anything to stop it except yell. And that's when Jimmy comes home and his dad's been waiting up for him.
Time you call this?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't got a watch.
Don't come funny, lad. It's nearly midnight, isn't it?
Oh, well, don't worry. I'm going to turn into a pumpkin, am I? Anyway, you're pissed.
Fuck. Wait, what's going on?
Tons. I've been sitting up for more than an hour waiting for you. I can do without your clever remarks.
George!
Who do you think you are, anyway?
Oh, I don't know. You tell me, eh?
You're barmy, that's what you are, staying out all hours. Getting up to God knows what, dressing up like a bloody freak. But stand still when I'm talking to you. Wouldn't be at all surprised if you were not on drugs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you get up to down that club, you and your mates. Your gang, you've got to be part of a gang, haven't you? Hey, you've got to be a model, this or that. I mean, haven't you got a mind of your own? I'll tell you what's wrong with you. You're schizophrenic, that's what you are.
What's that then, eh?
What's that? I'll tell you what that is. It's somebody like you who doesn't know whether his mind's over here or over there. Bloody split personality.
Half your mother's family were the same. I suppose that's where you get it. Your Uncle Sid was always trying to kill himself. And when he did, it was a bloody accident. He never knew where he was coming or going, a bit like you.
What happened to him then, eh?
He got drowned, didn't he? Fell down a bleeding well in the garden. Go on, get off the bed.
Probably unlike the first time I watched the movie, this time I was really behind the dad. Yeah, the dad had some solid points.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The dad is actually, it turns out, the dad's not a bad guy at all. His mom turns out to be a little shrewy.
But it's, I loved this scene. So Jimmy gets home and he's walking up the stairs to his room and his dad comes down the stairs and starts to yell at him about being sort of, for just being not very good at life. And so he kind of walks Jimmy back down the stairs, tries to give him some perspective on how Jimmy's actions are affecting the family. And Jimmy is, he's like physically shrinking in front of his dad. So all of the swagger that he had with his buddies, is gone, and he has no idea what to say. So he just kind of sits there, kind of cowardly sneering when his dad's trying to talk some sense into him. And then my favorite moment in the entire movie happened. His dad sits down in a chair and sort of dismisses Jimmy to let him go on his way. And then he does the most awesome thing I could have ever imagined. He reaches down beside the chair and pulls up an already open beer and starts drinking it. This beer that he just had hanging out next to the chair that he was not sitting in when Jimmy came home. So who knows how long it had been there, what it was even doing there, but it was ready for him. He knew exactly where it was because he sat down and he grabbed it without even looking. It was great. I love that beer.
Yeah, well, you know, it's even in the album itself. I think it's in Cut My Hair, but where it talks about how he says he knows he should fight, but his old man is really all right, and he doesn't really mind living at home. I mean, yeah, and when he's talking to his dad, you're absolutely right. Dad is actually not really being unreasonable at all, and Jimmy is shrinking physically, and he's also not making any eye contact with his dad. Like, he is being scolded. He knows it and he's used to it, but he's eventually going to be like, what do you know about this? You know, he's not really going toe to toe at all with dad.
No,
because his dad is right. And he knows he just has to endure it to go up to bed. Where of course, and this is a speech where his dad mentions that, maybe he's schizophrenic because half of his mom's family is, which that was pretty great.
Yeah, Dublin's uncle killed himself because he was such a loser, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, so maybe there's a little Don Young in Dad, but still. And then you have, one of the things that Jimmy's not a good employee either in his mailroom job because he ends up...
Jimmy is not a good anything.
No, he ends up taking home some of these advertising pictures of a scantily dressed, but not naked, girl model. And it's a pretty uncomfortable masturbation scene.
You mean like physically uncomfortable for Jimmy?
Oh, for everybody involved, I think. Yeah. It's not. Yeah. Anyway.
Like, man, British people really do that weird.
It's very uptight. And yet they bathe without any thought to the camera in the little cubicle.
Yeah, they don't mind showing the kibbles and bits when they're bathing and singing along next to other grown men, but when he's having some self-loving time, he keeps all of his clothes on.
Oh yeah, he's fully dressed with shoes, laying in bed, face down.
On his stomach.
Yes. And then there's this weird wiping of the hand thing. It's just uncomfortable.
I thought he was really enamored with that picture, because when he saw it, I thought he thought it looked a lot like She's Deaf.
It could have been, yeah. Yeah, maybe. So the next day, or the next scene at least, they know that the bank holiday is coming up, and they're going to go down to Brighton, and they're going to have a fun time in Brighton. And going to Brighton is a big deal for Jimmy, because he wants to be, I mean, he has these newspaper clippings on the wall of the mods versus the rockers. He wants to be part of this thing because he is a mod. And that's, again, big part of his self-worth. So leading up to this little bank holiday, they need to get some serious blues on drugs. So they had to find a lead to get lots of drugs, not just a little, one or two dollar or quid, I guess, pound. They need to get upwards of $9 or £9 worth of drugs. And so they end up striking out. And by the way, there was a little bit of racism in this movie that I didn't catch the first time around, because they end up...
That one comment was super racist.
Oh, no. That one comment in there was super racist. You're right. But there's all sorts of other comments. Like when Kevin was talking about being in the army, he talks about going down and get shipped off to the Gaulies and stuff. Yeah, that's all racist, too. Is it the British office? Where it must have been, yeah. Where the secretary ends up with the Gollywog.
I don't remember that.
You know what a gollywog is?
No.
It's like, think of Raggedy Ann, but black. And it's exclusively for white people. Yeah, it's like a little black Sambo doll kind of thing. Yeah, anyway, it's considered racist, so it's not good. Although we will point out that that one of the mod guys, only one, but one of the mod guys is a black guy.
The drug dealer?
Well, yeah, there's that. Okay, so they're off to find drugs, and their usual lead dries up in a racist scene. And then their next step is to pretty much demean themselves and go to Peter, Steph's fella, for a lead on drugs. So he gives them a lead, and they end up showing up at this place that has, like, a backroom boxing, and... they send him out, and I don't know what kind of car that was, but, and let's see if I can get it right, in the boot of the car, there's a whole bunch of drugs, so they pool their money together and buy like 10 pounds of drugs. Turned out to be paraffin wax instead of drugs. So what do? They,
you had to explain to, young Drew what paraffin was.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of language in this that was just fun. Yeah, so what they do is they trash this car quickly and then drive off. And then they have the brilliant plan of breaking into the chemist where Monkey and Steph work to steal pills. Now, I would say it's not a brilliant plan, except that it actually works. But when I was watching this thing, do you remember La Femme Nikita?
That's exactly what I thought about. This has to be a prequel to La Femme Nikita.
Oh, yeah, because it did not end well in La Femme Nikita.
Oh, yeah, although I would much rather hang out with Chalky than Nikita.
well, maybe.
Chalky is hilarious.
Oh, yeah. No, Chalky is fun. It's kind of a fun scene, really. And actually, you can tell that it seems like all the other guys are having a lot more fun than Jimmy is at any given moment.
Yeah, that's the whole movie.
Yeah, because Jimmy's wound a little tight. So anyway, they end up breaking into this chemist and stealing the pills, and then they end up going back to the coffee shop. And that's when he ends up giving Steph a nice little bunch of pills just for her, and so they end up going off to have a snog. And that's when I put in my notes, she's not super faithful, this deaf girl.
No, she's not.
But and then the next scene, the ready, steady, go scene. And this is the first time I, maybe being, a husky jean wearing guy anyway, I have never shrunk to fit jeans. This is the first time I think I had ever seen it in what you're maybe supposed to do, actually shrink to fit your jeans.
Yeah, I didn't get this at all.
Yeah, no, he was buying a pair of Levi's and shrinking them to fit. So he was getting his damp jeans all over the house. And he's also watching Ready, Steady, Go, where The Who is playing.
Yeah, this made me like the dad even more.
What's this rubbish thing?
Ready, steady, go.
Ready what?
Ready, steady, go.
Ready, steady, go. Bunch of lads. Bloody moron. I suppose they wear wet jeans and all, do they? Hey? What? Is that how you're supposed to play a guitar now then? Hey? Oh, God help us. Here, have you seen this?
What's after all that rubbish?
I could sing better than that, little ape. We call that singing? Sounds like a drowned dog. That'll make you deaf, you know.
But you could tell the dad was secretly digging The Who.
Well, you had to. I mean, The Who maybe have been disrespectful to their instruments, but, you know, they had that special something. Like, I always liked The Who much better than, say, The Stones. Even though The Stones had some great songs, too. And The Who was just in a different whole category to me than The Beatles. They were much edgier.
Right, and I think mostly due to your direct influence, I had similar tastes. I really, really enjoyed The Who growing up. And it wasn't until later that I learned to appreciate the Rolling Stones, and even later to appreciate the Beatles.
Yeah, see, our parents had a good... They laid a good foundation of bedrock Beatles for me, and I, actually, Dad's a big Stones fan, and I liked all the Stones hits. But I wouldn't really go into the lot. You look at the Stones' beginning kind of stuff, and it's, I think, frankly, way too bluesy for me. Anyway, that's a whole different conversation for another time. But also, did you, at any point during this movie, did you hum in your head, "Give me some money, give me some money"?
No, but I can totally see that.
Oh, I just... You know, because Spinal Tap also used to be a skiffle group. So, a lot of history of skiffle bands that done good. Anyway, so... after the little conversation with Dad and Ready, Steady, Go, the reason for the shrinking the jeans and stuff is because he, Jimmy, and his friends are going to go down to Brighton for the bank holiday, and they're going to have some mod and rocker interaction. Or at least they're going to have a big group of mods, at least. And this is where we get to see Chalky's fantastic scooter. I don't know about you, but I counted 14 mirrors on the scooter.
I lost count.
So they're all headed down to Brighton, and Chalky gets a little bit ahead of the group and ends up getting cut off by these rockers who are come off of a side road, and they end up running him off the road. He like goes... Like, does an endo over the scooter into some rubbish.
It looked really harrowing. I mean, that was some good stunt work. I hope it was stunt work.
Yeah.
They might have just crashing.
Oh, yeah, no, it may have been the Mad Max style stunt work where they said, "Hey, Chalky, crash your bike." Or, I'm sorry, your hair dryer. And, of course, because there's a lot of camaraderie within the mods, but they don't seem to mind leaving the weak to be picked off because, you know, they left Spider to get his ass kicked. And when Chucky bites it and destroys the front of his fantastic scooter, they just leave him there to find his own way to Brighton.
Yeah, they have a very strong group identity, but that group identity does not involve being patient.
No, not at all. So they all get into Brighton. Well, first, Chalky gets there last, but they all get into Brighton. And Steph gets there with Paul, but immediately just sort of jumps off his bike and goes right up to Jimmy. And she and Jimmy kind of cast their gaze and say hey to everybody. And then they see Ace Face, who is Sting. And
he is like the mod to end all mods.
Oh, yeah. He is King Mod. He is Lord God King Mod. And he drives a GS scooter, which is prominently featured in the soundtrack, the album. Because, you know, Jimmy doesn't drive a GS. Anyway, so. But Ace drives a GS. And he's got the best scooter. He's the sharpest dressed. He's got the best hair. He was, at least I put in my notes, I was asking whether he was the Kiefer Sutherland of Brighton.
Obviously he was.
Yes.
Maybe a little taller.
Yeah, maybe. Not much, though. Then they end up going into a Brighton club where they're playing Booker T and the MG's Green Onions, which is a great song.
And Paul pretty much ditches Steph for some American girls, right?
Yeah, a hippie chick. Mm-hmm. Yes, but Jimmy actually doesn't know it at that point. Because Jimmy goes into the club with the gang, and everybody sees Ace. As they're playing Louie Louie, Ace is doing the best dance ever. I wish this was a video podcast only to show you what Ace's dancing is like. It's incredible. His economy of movement, it's amazing. It brings a little tear to my eye thinking about it.
Yeah, this also baffled me. They're all digging Louie Louie, but they hate the Rockers.
Oh, I know. I don't get it. I know. It's a crazy world. So Ace is doing his little snap dance, and of course this attracts everyone's attention, including Steph, who goes down to dance next to Ace. But much to Ace's displeasure, he actually gets upstaged by our hero Jimmy, who dances his own absolutely fantastic jerky dance, but this time from the second floor or a balcony or a, I guess it was a balcony because there was he had crossed over the railing and ends up jumping off doing a stage dive or a crowd dive from the second floor, which is a trust fall. Cause yeah, he could have killed himself, but he gets thrown out of the club for those shenanigans. By the way, I love the fact that, Ace was truly annoyed that all the attention was not focused on him.
Yes, Sting played it very well.
Oh, yeah. And so anyway, Jimmy gets thrown out. And he ends up, this is where people have to find sleeping accommodations. Steph and her girlfriend have found a bed and breakfast. And the other guys just kind of have to makeshift find a place to stay. Jimmy ends up going to the beach. Because the beach is a place where a man can feel that he's the only soul in the world that's for real. I love this album. Have I mentioned that? Love this album.
Once or twice.
Anyway, so he goes down to the beach. But in another comic turn, Chalky and Dave end up trying to find, just they're trying to find any kind of shelter to sleep in. And they end up getting into some sort of shack along the beach. And with some other guys.
Like a utility room in a sewer corridor.
Yeah, it's not great. So they end up, and there are a bunch of other people bunked down there too. So as soon as they start complaining, they're like, oh, okay, sorry. And then they go to sleep.
Yeah, I mean, it's pitch black, so they can't see anything.
Exactly. And they're just happy to find a place, and it's not great, but the beggars can't be choosers. So the next morning, in a little piece of hilarity and shock, they wake up And they're, luckily, they're all covered up in some sort of blanketry, and or they brought a bedroll or something. So they poke their heads out of their bedroll, and they to see the ass of a rocker pulling on his leather breeches. And they are surrounded by rockers.
Yeah, I thought they were about to die.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So did they. But luckily, they covered up, and it was all just fun. So Jimmy had spent the night on the beach, and he's in a bad mood. Everybody kind of collects at this one, like, diner or whatever. Jimmy is a bad mood. In a bad mood, completely. And Dave tries to cheer him up or whatever. But still, he doesn't really... His mood doesn't really perk up until the riot starts. Oh, he really doesn't like it, though, when Dave mentions that, oh, yeah, he should have... it was stupid that he got kicked out of the club because... Steph was like, you know, she like open field because Paul went off and left her for some hippie. So he really could have capitalized on that if he would have. But, you know, oh, well, sorry, man.
Yeah, Dave's kind of a half friend.
Yeah, yeah. Well, also, Jimmy doesn't admit that he really fancies Steph, even though everybody else knows it.
Yeah, Jimmy's fooling nobody.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, and Dave is. It turns out Dave's not a great friend anyway. But everybody's standards are a little bit. Everybody's standards are a little different than ours, I think.
Yeah, it doesn't work really well when only part of your group believes in the concept of free love.
Yeah, exactly.
Other part of the group is not going to take it too well.
No, no. Well, that's why open relationships are probably doomed to fail. Because a lot of times it seems like open relationships are only open for one of the duo.
And that one would be Steph.
Yes, sadly. But, hey, we know Steph is up for it or down for it or well, whatever they call it these days. What do you crazy kids call it? DTF. But as I put in my notes, Steph is riot moistened. When shit starts to come down and there's like blood in the streets. By the way, having a riot, like with people actively hitting each other with malice on a beach seems very, very dangerous.
Yeah. I don't know how people didn't die in the water.
Yeah, well, and in real life, I don't know if people actually did die, because it seems like it would be fairly easy to have died. Especially since, even though they scoff at the one guy who wants to get a gun in preparation for going down there, who is it, Dave, has a pair of brass knuckles.
Yeah, those are pretty mean looking.
Yeah, brass knuckles are serious. I mean, you can kill someone with brass knuckles. Yeah, those had, like, I think, spikes on them, too, but even without that...
Yeah, they weren't just knuckles, they had spikes.
Yeah, yeah, that's a deadly weapon. Not to mention that, you know, being hit by with a 2x4 in your head could do some serious damage. I don't know. Maybe Chalky's head was probably pretty tough. Yeah, there was...
He had a lot of surface area to deflect the blows.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway. So, after this series of kind of running battles, the police show up and they're trying to get everybody to at least be rounded up. And Jimmy and Steph escape down this alley. By the way, the alley is now a tourist attraction. You can visit there in Brighton. I mean, I don't know if it's a... But it's definitely a tourist destination. How about that? I don't think anybody's selling tickets, but... Yeah, so...
Well, if you're going to go find a comfy place to have some standing sex, you might as well go there.
Yeah, well, yeah. I guess. So, yeah. So, they have their... well, Jimmy... sees it as a little romance. Steph sees it as a little afternoon delight, a little, you know, part of what you do during a riot.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember this, but it must have been awesomely awkward for you, because I remember you had to explain to me what they were doing.
When a mommy cat and a daddy cat love each other very much. Yeah. Yeah, actually, I probably said, you know what Jimmy was doing by himself in his room? Yeah, they were both doing that together in this situation.
No, I have I have no doubt that the first time I saw this movie, I had no idea what Jimmy was doing on his stomach.
Well, it's because the world was a simpler and more gentle place. Anyway, so
it used to be.
Yeah, well, yeah. So now that Jimmy and Steph are engaged, Ace, by the way, we get to see a little bit of him. Ace is actually stomping on cops and whatnot.
Yeah, he pulled like the lead cop off his horse, right?
Oh yeah, he's a brutal guy. And of course, when Jimmy and Steph emerge, they find themselves in the middle of a melee, just as the police are detaining rioters. So Jimmy gets arrested and thrown into this paddy wagon with a bunch of rockers. But luckily for him, who gets thrown in next? But Ace.
No, Jimmy got thrown in. Ace was invited.
Well, yeah, actually, yeah. Ace is like, hands off, I'm going to walk up myself. And then he proceeds to offer Jimmy a cigarette, turn to offer one of the rockers a cigarette, and when the rocker says, oh, I don't mind if I do, he snaps the cigarette case on his hand, like, look, what are you doing? Fuck you. Then offers one to the constable who's riding with him in the paddy wagon. So, if nothing else, though, Jimmy has a friend and ally in Ace. Or at least he thinks he does. So then they end up appearing before the magistrate. Everybody else ends up just driving home on the bike. Turns out Steph ends up riding on the back of Dave's bike on the way home. But Ace and Jimmy and the rest of the people who are arrested appear in court, where the judge gives them a little talking to. But Ace is super cool as always, because when they find 75 pounds, Ace just pulls out his checkbook and says, can I pay that now? And asks for a pen. That amuses his fellow mods. He is something of their king.
Yes, not only is he the best dressed, the best dancer, the best rioter, but he also has money to pay the fine.
Yes. Yes, he's everything.
He is good at life.
Yes, he is. So back in London, Jimmy, not that good in life right now, he is increasingly depressed. His mom has found his stash of pills, and the immortal words,
you stay right where you are. Well, at least I don't have to ask where you've been this time, do I? I suppose you think this is all very clever. I suppose you're proud of yourself now, eh?
No.
What do you mean, no? You was there, weren't you? You and them animals you call friends?
Yeah, we were there.
And I suppose you had some more of this filth with you, didn't you? You can look shamefaced, my lad. I've a good mind to get the law on you. Where'd you get these from?
I don't know. Someone gave them to me.
Oh, did he? And of course you had to take them, didn't you? Because you've got to look big. I suppose if he said they was rat poison, you'd have taken them anyway, wouldn't you? And then got off like a pack of savages, ruined everybody peace and quiet for them. I look at you and I don't know what I brought up, so help me God, I don't. Your sister's not like this.
Oh, ain't she?
No,
what
she's
do you
not.
Fucking
you
know,
you with your
drugs
and your filthy pictures. Running right over everywhere. You're a little animal, that's what you are. You want to be locked up. I've done my best. Look what I've got for it. A bloody mad thing.
Oh, yeah.
You're a little savage. Get out of my house. Go on. Get out.
All right.
Get up. You're no son of mine, you little fiend. You and your father comes home.
Oh, you're all right.
Go on, get out.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
She kicks him out of the house.
Who hasn't heard that?
Of course, he ends up quitting his job when he's being reprimanded by his smug boss. He quits his job, although they give him severance, which is nice.
Yeah, I couldn't figure out why he got the golden handshake.
Yeah, it must be some like crazy labor law or something that he has to be given severance pay. Yeah, so he takes his big severance and he buys. He takes out his £5 note and buys himself a shit ton of pills. But, and, you know, again, even Monkey is a little worried that he's lost his job, too, because, again, she cares about Jimmy. Poor Monkey. This is when you find out, though, that Dave and Steph are an item. And
well, yeah. Well, why wouldn't they be? I mean, he gave her a ride home.
Yeah, well. And Dave is rather amused that Jimmy quit his job, but offers him a suggestion in the best line in the movie, I thought.
Hey, Jimmy! I hope you find a new job.
Oh, yeah.
I can always get a job on the rubbish carts. Yeah, she says you're good at going up and down in alleyways.
That was a good line.
Brutal. And Steph was like, yeah, I told him.
Oh, she thought it was hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
She's so, a horrible person.
She is. Well, it gets worse because the following morning, Jimmy has not also not slept. He slept in the shed. Has to wait till his dad leaves to work on his bicycle before he runs in the house to grab his stuff. And he ends up riding his scooter and catches up with Steph walking to her work. And she gives a nice little speech proving what horrible person she is. And then Jimmy's life is going poorly now. I felt sorry for Jimmy, even though he set this all up. Now, all of this was on him. When his scooter gets run over by the truck, that was pretty sad and a little funny.
Hello, Steph.
What are you doing here?
Well, I wanted to see you.
All right, well, now you've seen me, okay?
Hey, wait a minute, will ya?
What you gonna do, beat me up? All right, what do you want? Come on, walk, I'm late.
Well, I left home last night. I kicked out, didn't I?
In some nut house.
Look, I ain't mad, you know.
What is wrong with you then?
Well, I don't know. It seems like everything's going backwards, that's all, Steph.
You sure it's not you that's going backwards?
No, it's just, well, I can't think straight, that's all. I mean, nothing seems right apart from Brighton. I mean, Brighton was okay, going to court with the ace and that. And, like, I was a mud there, you know? That's something, isn't it, eh?
Oh, what are you talking about? Brighton was a laugh. That's why we went down there. It was a giggle, that's all.
Oh, yeah. And me and you, then? Was that just a giggle?
Oh, what do you think? All right, so I fancied you. We had it off together. But that don't mean nothing, does it?
Well, it did to fucking me.
Well, I can't help that, Jimmy, can I? If I'd known you were going to go off your bloody nut, I wouldn't have bothered, would I?
Well, I told you, I'm fucking mad, right?
No, not much. Look at you. Listen, one minute you're all right, next minute you're going bloody stupid. You can't even have a bit of the other without kicking your mate's head in for it. Look, just leave me alone, Jimmy. Just leave me alone, all right?
Steph, please. Steph, please.
Oh, fuck off!
You slag! Ah, you cunt! Slag!
Bloody hell, are you doing? I'm going to kill you.
Hey?
Look at this.
Oh, fuck, you know what you've done.
What about this?
You cunt.
Why do you stop?
You've killed me, Stuart. Fuck off. Leave me alone. Get off it. Fuck off. Get off it. Oh, my God. Fucking leave it alone! Get off it! There it is, on the floor now!
You're lucky you ain't been killed by anything.
I'm fucking lucky, am I?
Of course you are.
You're a bastard!
Oh, she didn't see you! I didn't know where you came from!
Come away!
15 years I've been driving, never had an accident!
Ah, never had a fucking accident, but you got me, didn't you? Wanted to kill me!
Right.
Oh, have you? Right. Oh, you fucking Mr. Postman, fuck off!
Come
go
on,
sir,
report.
Fuck off!
Hilarious.
Where he's like, "You've killed my scooter."
Yeah, they're trying to comfort him and help him, and he just keeps telling him to fuck off.
Oh, yeah. Well, at this point, you know, he wouldn't have minded if they had just run him over because he's thinking his world is over.
Right.
So, you know, what do you do? Like, you're out of friends and your best girl who you've made a love connection with has rejected you. And, you know, the only place where you felt like you're really in your element was at Brighton. So you end up taking a train down to Brighton. And this is where, how familiar are you with the album?
Not that familiar.
Okay. Well, one of the better songs in the album is, they're all good, but one of the better, more rockin' songs is 515. And for a reason I can't understand, they play the song with the second verse first and then the first verse second. Like, you can actually hear the edit, and I don't get it.
That must have really blown your mind when you were watching this.
It did. It did. It, the first time I watched it and the second time I watched it just now. It was like, I don't understand why they did. I mean, I knew it was coming. Also, you know, the movie, because the album is, you know, it's a double album, so it's long anyway. They can't put all the songs in there. But I thought it was weird because the last song, Love Rain Over Me, comes right about now. But then there's some other songs that are earlier in the album, but later in the movie. Anyway, that's not a big deal.
Well, they also play it again later.
Well, that's part of the big, because, you know, the theme, Love Rain Over Me, is part of like every other song on the album, because they all have this opera thing going on. It's like the Bellboy theme is in a lot of songs too.
I love that song, by the way.
Oh, Love Rain Over Me. It's a great song. It's why I didn't watch the Don Cheadle Adam Sandler movie, because they play that song in the trailer, and I didn't want to have any part of that.
Why? That was a good movie.
Okay, well, that's cool, but sorry. I like the song for other reasons. I don't want to see him, you know, on the scooter. Yeah, that's I'm petty. I admit. Okay, so anyway, he gets on the train. Does he put eye makeup on?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, because it's like, still very well dressed, but with eye makeup on. Taking a lot of pills. He ends up trying to go down to Brighton and kind of relive the scene of his recent excitement. And
well, I love the scene on the train where he's walking through first class and he actually runs into his boss.
Oh yeah. It's there's, again, lots of little things are hilarious. And he's out of his head with pills.
And he just crashes in a first class compartment and sits down with the look that's sort of daring anybody to say something to him.
Yeah, he's on the ragged edge. And then he's wandering around Brighton and he sees Ace's scooter outside of a really posh hotel.
And he is so excited.
He is. He's super excited because he's gone down basically to see Ace. He wants to hang out with his buddy Ace because he can like live the mod life. And unfortunately, that's when you find out that Ace the Face, is really a bellboy at a hotel.
He works for the man.
He works for the man and wears a little monkey hat. And Jimmy loses his shit. He follows Ace up. I mean, well behind Ace, but he is stunned that his hero is now piling up bags and walking behind rich people. Clearly not happy with it either, but he is definitely a servant. And Jimmy's kind of walks behind him, and as Ace is halfway through the hotel lobby, he just screams through the front doors.
Down.
Bellboy!
Carry this baggage out.
Bellboy! Bellboy!
And that's when Jimmy does the only reasonable thing he's ever done in this movie. He steals Ace's scooter.
Yeah, because apparently if you have one key to the scooter, it works in all scooters.
Yeah, evidently. And here you're back where the film began, where he's riding along the cliff. You get the song I've Had Enough, which is a great song. And then at the very end, when he's had enough of everything, he rides the motorcycle to the edge and jumps off, and the scooter goes flying over the edge of the cliff and crashes on the rocks below.
You stop dancing.
He just cannot. He's physically incapable of making the right decision.
You think he should have gone over with it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Nah, I think maybe when I first saw this as a teenager, I thought that would have been the right thing. But I want to think, and this is where my question comes in a second, but I think he just wanted to fuck Ace's shit up, which isn't, you know, the most mature thing, but it leads me to believe that there maybe was some hope for Jimmy or Mr. Jim.
I don't even want there to be hope for Jimmy.
Really?
Yeah, there was nothing redeemable about him. I mean, the experience of watching this movie was just cringe after cringe of watching him make the wrong decision over and over and over.
You don't think that it ends with him making the right decision, at least by leaping off the bike before it goes off the cliff?
Well, only in like a cosmically moral sense.
Well, you know. By the way, I don't know how much you know, or if there's any extras or something that you saw about this, the filming of the end.
Mm-mm.
Well, they had to get permission to dump a scooter off of a cliff. So they had to make sure that they took the gas tank out of it, and they took, I think there were a couple scooters that actually they used. But they had to rig it so that it didn't like explode or cause like gas and oil to go all over the rocks below at the bottom of the cliff. I mean, it was, you know, even back then with environmentally, it would have been a problem. So there's one, I think one take where the seat itself covers like some sort of engine compartment, but because there wasn't an engine there, the seat just kind of flew off. So you could see all that it was just stripped down. So they couldn't use that take at all. But the take that they actually used, I think, because they had taken all this stuff off of it, they didn't realize how far this thing was going to go launching off the cliff. So they were shooting that scene from a helicopter with the director on board the helicopter, and the scooter nearly hit the helicopter. Which, that would have ruined everybody's day.
Have you ever had the fortune of being in a helicopter?
Never.
Yeah. They don't feel like you should be able to fly.
Yeah, well, technically,
they move in really odd ways. Like they can sort of spin in place, and they can move sideways, which is really disorienting when your only other data point is being on an airplane, which pretty much just moves straight forward.
Or a car, or a motorcycle.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a big fan of like little aircraft or pretty much anything where I have to accurately tell them my weight, or it could result in the whole plane crashing. I'm not a big fan of anyway. But thing
you're talking about my trip tomorrow morning, by the way.
Oh yeah. No. I know. Well, except that on a helicopter. Somebody had told, I can't remember who told me that. I think it was a bellboy or bellman at the hotel once told me that, you know, the reason, there's only one reason they have seat belts in helicopters. That's so they can find your body.
Nice.
Yeah. So anyway, actually that's obviously not true, because one of the things about a helicopter that I find charming is that some of them don't even have doors. Like, that seems
it's true.
Entirely unreasonable. Especially for something that's all tilty in the air. Yeah. So the scooter crash is where it ends and the credits roll, and they play the song Dr. Jimmy. Let me just read a little bit of the lyrics. Maybe I'll put a part of the song in here because it's part of the movie. But part of the lyrics are, "What is it? I'll take it. Who is she? I'll rape it. Got a bet there? I'll meet it. Getting high? You can't beat it. Dr. Jimmy and Mr. Jim, when I'm pilled, you don't notice him. He only comes out when I drink my gin. You say she's a virgin? I'm going to be the first in. Her fella going to kill me? Oh, fucking Willie. I'm seeing double, but don't miss me if you can. There's going to be trouble when she chooses her man."
That's wonderful.
Isn't it wonderful? Yeah. It's, my daughter will be singing that going into some sort of counseling meeting at some point in her lifetime.
Yeah.
the way, originally approached to play the role of Jimmy and even screen tested, would have played this role, could have been Jimmy for all time. However, the distributors refused to insure him for the part.
Dr. Jimmy and Mr. Jim, when I'm peeled, you don't notice him. He only comes out when I drink my gin.
Similar to why Lindsay Lohan's not going to act anytime soon in a real movie. You have any idea?
This sounds promising. No.
One, John Lydon.
Oh, see, I was going with Sid Vicious.
Oh, yeah. No, that would have been, yeah.
But, yeah, Johnny Rotten. Nice.
Yeah, absolutely. And he could do it, too. Although, I think Jimmy looked the part in this movie.
No, he was perfect for it. I think Johnny Rotten would have been too angry, and Jimmy was more pathetic.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like John Lydon, he may have wanted to be more cool. And right. While Phil Daniels' Jimmy has a lot of cool little parts to it. I mean, I like his little patter. You know, when he's swinging, he's doing a good job. But the problem is, there's plenty of scenes where he's just the pathetic guy that he is that you didn't like.
Right.
So. Well, I guess I apologize if this made you feel poorly, but
no. I'm glad I watched it. The music was great. The movie looked great. There are lots of great scenes. I mean, it's fun to see Sting so young. But yeah, it's uncomfortable to watch, and I felt no sympathy for Jimmy. So. You know, I had no desire to watch his journey because he was so unlikable of a character. And it was obvious to everybody but Jimmy about the path he was going down. So, yeah, it was not fun to watch.
I don't know. I don't know why I liked it so much. I know it's because I like the album so much. I thought it was, I like the experience of watching it again. Except it had some uncomfortable moments, you know, what with the bathroom scene, which is otherwise a fantastic scene in any movie.
That scene is hilarious. Yeah. That's probably the best scene in the whole movie.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought the dancing was fantastic at the club in Brighton. I'm going to have to post on, at least on the Facebook page. You know, someday you probably have to join Facebook just to get some of this feedback we're getting.
You get feedback?
Well, I don't get a lot of feedback. Let's not get crazy. But yeah, there's been some feedback. I know there are people who I've never met that like the show, so that's cool.
That is very cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not on Facebook, so if anybody wants to give me feedback in particular, I recommend calling the phone number and leaving a voicemail.
Yeah, text or voicemail is good. Yep. Or you can send an email even to drew@notinacreepyway.com. Send your feedback to show@notinacreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.